Hello, and welcome to the second episode in our short series of podcasts looking at mental health and well-being. In this episode, we'll listen to Adil Amini, senior producer in entertainment from TV, talking about his work to establish TV Mindset and the subsequent Coalition for Change. Over to you, Adil.
Hello, my name's Adil Amini. I'm a senior TV producer in entertainment. And alongside that, I run the freelancer mental health support group called the TV Mindset, as well as chairing the pan-industry working group called the Coalition for Change. I started getting involved with mental health mainly because of my own experiences. I mean, that's where most things like this start. But I've suffered from depression and anxiety pretty much all my life. And in 2016, I was diagnosed with something called borderline personality disorder. Now, at the time, I was a struggling producer, I was struggling to get work, I didn't have enough money, and it was quite a tough time in this industry, and I know that most freelancers probably relate to that feeling. However, for me, it was exacerbated in the sense that I had no one to talk to while I was going through all of this. I think in the freelance world, we are taught to keep our problems to ourselves, present a really perfect front so that we don't appear any less employable for any of the work that we're about to go for, and not talk to our friends either, again, for that fear of being judged, which isn't something exclusive to our industry. Obviously, that happens on a national level, and we do need to improve the conversations around mental health. However, in our industry, it is particularly concentrated. So I left the industry in 2016 and had to get rehabilitated, and basically picked myself back up and thought, you know what, I want to give this another go, because why should I leave something I love for something that isn't my fault and essentially I was born with? So I started working again in the entertainment sector, and once I managed to regain a healthy balance in my life and manage my condition, I realised that what I could do and what I learned was that other people would probably be going through the same thing that I did, and they too have no one to talk to and no one they can turn to, and I wanted to change that. So with that in mind, I started doing some wellness mornings with the help of places like ITV Studios and Fremantle. And ultimately that became, after some work with the film and TV charity, it became the TV Mindset, which was launched officially in January 2020 and has been growing from strength to strength ever since. The film and TV charity first appeared on my radar in 2019 when I was running these mental health mornings, and the very brilliant and talented Lucy Tallon and her colleagues were in touch, and they came to speak at the second wellness morning that I ran, which was incredible because at that point, you know, the film and TV charity rebranded, people didn't know they existed, they had a helpline that people could reach out to, and it was something that really, you know, the two of us with what we were doing, it really appealed to a section of freelancers. I think that's the reason they've had so much impact, is that we were clearly tapping into something that people needed. After that, they were running the results of their Looking Glass survey, which was a huge, like, seismic shift in the industry, in that it revealed just how serious the mental health problems were. So they used me as a case study, in that I was quite open about my story at that point. I'd written a lot of articles about my mental health, and I didn't have any shame or problem in appearing in front of the industry and declaring what I'd been through, because I know there was a lot of people came to me and said, oh, you're really brave to do that. And I thought, you know what, one of the first things that we need to do is tackle this idea that sharing is an act of bravery or something that could get me into trouble. So I thought, no, I've got to lead by example. Everyone knows my story anyway, and if my story can help other people, then that's what I'll do. So I appeared in on BBC News, Sky News broadcast, sharing my story and essentially saying what needed to change. And that just created a huge ripple. And it's thanks to the film and TV charity that I was able to get that platform. Similarly, when I was running webinars during the COVID crisis, I was eligible for one of their community grants. So they helped me fund a lot of the accessibility costs that I was having to put towards. So that includes BSL interpreting, and captioning for deaf and disabled viewers of the webinars. So they've been a huge help, and I'm really grateful for the work they do for freelancers. So for those who don't know, the Coalition for Change is something I formed along with the TV Mindset, and that involves all of the broadcasters, the major public service broadcasters, streaming services and industry stakeholder groups, including Bechtu and the charity, coming together every quarter to improve freelance working practices. I'm not going to lie, when I said putting that coalition together was perhaps one of the most difficult periods of my life. You know, we were already in a pandemic and I was trying to wrangle a group of stakeholders that historically don't ever work together, let alone acknowledge the difficulties that their workforce go through. It's always just something that's swept under the carpet. So there was a lot of resistance in some ways. I think there was a lot of suspicion around what my motives were and why I wanted to do this. And to be honest, I think there probably still is in some quarters. But I was determined. I just thought, we're not going to leave this pandemic in the same way that we went in. And now is a chance for people to put their money where their mouths were. You know, they're saying all of this stuff about diversity, about Black Lives Matter, about freelance workforces. And yet things could have just gone back to what they were. And I just wasn't willing to let that happen. And I'm pleased to say that, you know, when people do sort of meet and we get to chat, they realise that actually leaning into this culture change is the way forward. It is definitely the right thing to do. And I'm really, really grateful that, you know, despite the ups and downs, of which there are many, because when you get that many people in a room together and you're discussing change on such a wide level, there are going to be issues and it's not going to be, you know, progress isn't going to be linear. But I'm really pleased and proud that everyone is throwing themselves into this and wants to do the right thing. But it definitely does not come without its challenges. So before the pandemic, this industry was already struggling. I think a lot of us freelancers particularly suffer from incredible self-doubt and this lack of support. We don't know whether a job that we've done is good enough. We're not getting any feedback on the other side of it. The phone's not ringing and you look at yourself and you think, oh my God, it must be me. What have I done wrong? You link your self-value to that as well. And you think, I'm not good enough. My friends are all in work. I'm struggling. It must be me. But you could be doing that for 10, 11 years or 12 like I have and still have those same thoughts. And then there's a support as well. You know, if I need to go to therapy, can I do that? If I am struggling at work, who can I talk to? If I'm being bullied or harassed, what can I do? And do I want to be called a troublemaker? If somebody's being racist towards me, what do I do? So all of these things were sort of wrapped up and enveloped and sort of encouraged by a culture of fear and silence. And that was even before we went into the pandemic. And now we're looking at things such as health and safety and hours and a reduced amount of work and lower budgets. And of course, you know, the freelancers are the first to feel the squeeze of all of that. So it's a really difficult time. I think we were by far, you know, the most undervalued section of this workforce going into the pandemic. And even now it has squeezed people to the point that, you know, people are considering leaving the industry. People are struggling. There's those who've got to balance caring duties, who've got to balance, you know, childcare, and also those who've got to look after their own mental health. And sometimes you do sort of step back and think, is it worth it? The pandemic has been a bit of a double-edged sword for the industry because on one hand, we've all had to give up work and it's tougher than ever out there. However, it's also allowed a period of introspection because I'll be honest, freelancers aren't unfamiliar to the sort of feast or famine nature of things. You know, we leave a social environment with routines and lunches and, you know, a trip to, you know, wherever to a studio. And then once your contract ends, that's it. You're, you know, watching daytime TV and wondering when the phone will ring. So I think we're used to it on that front. But this time it was unpredicted. Shut off a lot of productions. It was unplanned. Things that were, you know, contracted suddenly had to change and people were let go or furloughed. So in that regard, I think, you know, freelancers are really resilient and we have to be. But I think the blessing has been that it's allowed a period of introspection where we've looked at the conditions in the industry and we've thought, hang on, this isn't right. And in that regard, people have approached TV Mindset a lot more than before the pandemic, and understandably so. But it's been in an interesting way, because I think they realise that everyone has gone through similar things with the pandemic, and there are helplines and support available for that in general. However, I think they're now also engaging and leaning into the work that everyone else is doing and saying, actually, we don't have to put up with this stuff. So I've got more messages about how to deal with bullying and harassment, how to disclose mental health or disability issues, and, you know, a lot of that stuff. So what I feel like it has done is empower us in a way that has never happened before. And it's a shame that it took a global pandemic to do that, but ultimately it has given us a window to fight for what we deserve, which is to go to work with dignity and respect. I think the conversations that have happened since the pandemic hit have really enabled us all to, again, look at what is acceptable and what isn't. And I think I would like to say that bullying and harassment and racism and ableism are on the way out. It will take a long time, because not only are we dealing with infrastructure issues and reporting facilities and whistleblowing lines that need to be strengthened, but we're also looking at a culture and historically people who have been enabled because they're apparently really good at their job, and that excuses them from lousy behaviour, which of course it doesn't. So I think what we're looking at now is a shift in both areas, but also I think a real moment for those people who have been perpetrating these problems to look at themselves and think, what have I been doing? What have I been doing to other people? How have I been making them feel? What am I doing to contribute to this? And also, am I going to be held to account? Which, you know, we've seen a lot of instances that have gone public of productions that have been problematic, and people have been held to account, And I think I'm hoping actually that that does send a ripple out to the industry to say, actually, this behaviour isn't acceptable. We will say that it's not acceptable, and if you continue to accept it, we will have to take it further. So in that regard as well, I think the bullying and harassment, you know, I think people are leaning into it, but I think people are being able to spot it more as well. I think that's also a key thing. It is the fact that, what does bullying behaviour look like? What does it look like in the context of an interview, or during a job, or after a job, or in between it? You know, what does gaslighting look like? What does it look like to be put in those positions? And that's where it becomes really key, is that we're also empowering people to recognise it. So the truth is, in that wider society, those who fall into the intersections are going to be the ones who suffer the most. For those who don't fully sort of understand the concept of intersectionality, you know, I identify as a cisgender, gay, Muslim man. Obviously, I've got brown skin as well, but essentially that's, you know, I fall under the two intersections of being Muslim, so I suffer from Islamophobia, from being gay, so I could suffer from homophobia. And of course, you know, I've got my mental health issues as well, which could also play a part in people's prejudices. Now, you know, you could be a woman, but you could understand that black women probably suffer more than any other demographic within women. You know, you've got disability. You could have somebody who is Asian, transgender and disabled, and even in the wider world, they would be suffering the most because policies are so heavily levied against them, and usually in favour of white cisgender privilege. You know, when we talk about systemic racism, we're not talking about somebody calling me a slur. We're talking about the fact that all the things that you see, whether it's like accessibility, getting into jobs, people's prejudices, the comments on an accent, a microaggression, to the, you know, systemic weighting of all the channel controllers in our industry being white. All of those things are, you know, part of a family of systemic racism, which is, you know, having, as in the title, a system being weighted against you. That usually affects the marginalised first. And when we talk about the intersection, it is the marginalised of the marginalised that we're talking about. And I say this very often, and I apologise for those who have heard me talk elsewhere and have heard the same thing, but when we discuss the coalition, you know, we have all sorts of groups at the table. We have women's groups, we have disabled groups, we have specifically black groups, and obviously mental health groups. And my philosophy is that if the policy doesn't work for the marginalised of the marginalised, if it doesn't protect them, then it's not worth the paper it's written on. And I stand by that. And I think the key thing with the coalition is what we've always done and what we've always said is that it's not about having a seat at the table. It's about building a brand new table with equity and access for all, and, you know, essentially them being able to have their say. So when it comes to intersectionality, it's, you know, yes, as a gay man, I go through certain things, but also I go, you know, as a Muslim man, as a brown skin man, I go through other things. And for everyone else, it's to recognize those issues and that there isn't, you know, a one size fits all. Even for the people who fall into my intersection, somebody out there could be saying all sorts of things and saying, oh, you know, we all think like this. And I'll stop and say, well, hang on, no, you don't speak for me. And I think the key is to be able to recognize the individuals under all these labels and realize that we all have our own struggles, our own lives, our own experiences, and they are valid. I think the key to remember as well, with all of the prejudice and the, you know, the unfair experiences that we do go through, that they are heavily supported by a system that isn't weighted in our favor. And that includes, you know, the people at the top, the way that promotions happen, the way that jobs are even, you know, the way that people hire others. You know, we have such an informal recruitment policy in this industry, and it can be quite a closed shop or an old boys network. So I think we have to look at what those structures are and look at not so much building, you know, like it's not like building an extension to suddenly house other people. We want to shake the foundations and redo the foundations, because essentially they are built in the image of an old time in this country. You know, these institutions that were built at the time when white privilege was very much, you know, the agenda and has formed so much of our laws and policies. So of course our industry is going to suffer from the same issues that wider society does, because it's built in that image. So when we look at policy and we look at change, we have to go a lot deeper than just diversity schemes or unconscious bias hiring or, you know, training, you know, about diversity. It's got to go to the deep-rooted policy of it all and changing the image of this industry. So I always joke with people about my future plans, in that I think that my greatest achievement with the TV mindset would be to be able to shut it down, because in order to do that, it would mean that everything is working as it is and freelancers are getting enough support. Because I'm not going to lie, I'm always resentful for what I have to do at some level. I think if all of our institutions, our unions, our broadcasters, our indies and our trade bodies and skill sectors were all doing what they were supposed to do properly, then I wouldn't have to be here. And it does make me sad that a freelancer has had to come up and step up. And that too, you know, a minority freelancer has to have had these conversations for people to listen, because this isn't my job and it isn't our job. We are here to be creative. I want to go back to my day job. I got into TV to produce and not to campaign. So my ideal future, you know, obviously I've got to see through the Coalition for Change, and we're going to do the best job that we possibly can for that. And unfortunately, I just don't think I can rest until I feel like the industry is in a comfortable position where it can be sustained and where most of these problems have been mitigated. But ultimately, you know, the dream is to continue what I'm doing in the creative sector and not have to look after a lot of these issues, because, you know, ultimately they do affect my mental health as well. But, you know, I know that I'm way more privileged, and I've you know, been lucky to have jobs. I've got the career that I do. I've got the support that I do. And I've, you know, managed to weather my own storms to get to this position. So I would just, you know, reassure everyone that I think the broadcasters and everyone involved, I don't think they probably underestimate just how stubborn and determined I can be when it comes to exacting change. But needless to say, I won't rest until it happens.
Thank you, Adil, for sharing your thoughts and personal experiences. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today. In our next episode, we'll be listening to Lucy Tallon from the Film and TV Charity.